It was actually kind of cool to see an export sales announcement for soybeans and for bean prices to move higher. I know. I thought we were living in bizarro world too, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but the market actually made sense today.
Live from the land of confusion via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk Contradiction Junction. This afternoon, we've got pro farmers, captains of cognition to make sense of it all. Senior market analyst Jeff Wilson, editor Brian Grady will join us. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yeah. Hey, you know, I'm on board with the way that the bean market performed today, but I'm telling you, it's more of the rumors of additional sales that probably put the gas into the bean market today. Did I just say that?
I think you did. Yeah.
I think I did.
That was awesome. I don't have a sound for that.
They were the good.
It's a bridge too far.
Wow. Yes. Yeah. No, I think it was the talk of additional sales and the expectations that we're going to see some more announcements yet this week is what probably got behind that bean market today. And the reason that I wanted to back off of that, the markets actually made sense today.
Yeah.
Is because, I mean, June live cattle were down the $3 limit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not exactly sure why.
Well, it kind of took them all day 30. To get there, right? Took them all day to get there.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I know that the box beef market is backing off, but, you know, when it was making $15 to $20 advances on a daily basis, we weren't really seeing the live cattle futures follow along to the upside. So now that it's backing down, don't give that to me as a reason for live cattle futures to trade lower.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not exactly. We'll find out from Jeff and Brian. You know that's the bottom line there. We'll go to those guys, figure out what's going on in the cattle complex, and of course it's pork week.
So you know, we had talked earlier about a pork buffet, and I just want to run down an audio version of what that might look like. Are you ready?
I am.
Bacon,
sausages,
pork chops.
Right there, top to bottom, top to bottom.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love
ham,
it.
Bacon,
sausages,
pork chops.
Yeah, ham, bacon, sausages, pork chops. And it's only Tuesday. It's not. We're nowhere near getting to loins yet. Nothing like
that's
that. No
right.
ribs yet. No shoulder. You know, you got to slow cook ribs in a shoulder, especially a shoulder.
Yes. Yeah. No doubt.
You try and rush it, you'll wreck it. Yeah.
Love it. Let's get to the news.
Chip, improved growing conditions in Europe and the Black Sea regions weighed on wheat prices again today. Also, Egypt bought 120,000 metric tons of wheat from Ukraine for mid-July delivery. That reinforced speculation that Ukraine will continue to export wheat despite hitting export quotas about 2 weeks ago. USDA puts the spring wheat crop at 91% planted as of May 31. That's about 5 points behind the five-year average. North Dakota is just 85% planted, 10 points behind the average pace. Winter wheat crop conditions deteriorated in the latest week, 51% good to excellent, down from 54% last week. And wheat rated poor to very poor increased 3 points to 19%. July hard red winter wheat was 11¾ cents lower, 450¾. July soft red fell 7¼ cents to 508. July spring wheat fell 4¾ to close at 516½, Chip.
Yeah, 1/5 of the wheat crop rated poor to very poor. That's enough that it's catching my attention. The market needs to pay a little bit more attention to it. But with what's going on in the Black Sea and the improvement to the crop in Europe, I don't know if the U.S. crop conditions are going to catch much attention from the market or not.
Well, those lower wheat prices were an anchor on corn prices, but generally good growing conditions for much of the corn crop also limited buying interest and is keeping professional trading funds comfortably on the short side of the market. Mm-hmm. Corn planting is 93% complete, and USDA says 78% of the corn crop had emerged by the end of May. Both plantings and emergence are ahead of the five-year average. USDA also increased the corn crop rated good to excellent from last week by 4 points to 74%. Wow. July corn futures were a penny higher at 324 and a quarter. September corn firmed 1 1/4 cents, 328 and a half. Dece corn is at 338 today. That's up 2 1/4 cents.
Yeah, we need some demand news for this corn market. Oh. I don't care if it's old crop or new crop. We just need some demand news.
USDA this morning announced the sale of 132,000 metric tons of U.S. soybeans for delivery in the new crop marketing year. And there were rumors today that China has purchased more than 500,000 tons of new crop beans this week. Traders expect another export sales announcement tomorrow morning. Bean plantings advanced 10 points in the week, ended May 31 to get to 3/4 planted. And more than half of the bean crop has now emerged. In the first condition rating of the year, USDA put 70% of the bean crop in good to excellent condition. Mm-hmm. July soybean futures were a dime higher, 850 and a half. August beans jumped 9.5 cents, 852 3/4. November 2020 bean futures closed at 860 and a half. That's up 8 1/4 on the day, Chip.
Yeah. Those bean sales, if they were made, they are going to be new crop, and it looks like it's going to be for shipment out of the PNW. So that's good news.
July cotton, 31 points higher today at 60.37. December cotton firmed 79 ticks to 59.50. And let's check the livestock side, where June live cattle futures were down the $3 daily trading limit to 95.30. August cattle dropped 277 and one half to 96.20. August feeders fell 270 to 133.42 and a half. And on the snout side, June lean hogs were $2.20 lower, 52.40. July hogs softened 27 and one half, 54.87 and a half. Chip.
Yeah, June Class 3 milk futures up 58 cents at 19.55. July was up 31 at 18.23. Right. August up 22 at 17.12. And September up 15 at 16.83. So there was some strength in the milk market today, too. That's good stuff. Thank you, Davis. Good. Let's bring in Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. How you doing, Joe?
Good. What's going on today, Chip?
Well, I keep hearing these rumors about the bean sales. That's pretty good news.
It is good news. We need more of it. I've kind of thought for a long time that if there were going to be a lot of purchases from China, they'd be new crop. I mean, that's typically when their hole is, when they can't get beans from South America. So it would make a lot of sense if there were more new crop bean purchases. So it's a good thing. We need to see more of it.
Yep. Corn was caught in a tough spot today. Wheat was trying to drag it lower while beans were trying to help it to the upside.
Yeah, like you mentioned, we could use some positive demand news. And I will say the ethanol situation is in the process of recovering. It's just the recovery appears to be very slow. Even after 4 consecutive weeks of better ethanol output, we're still running 30-plus percent below last year. And that, I still think, is the biggest problem for the corn market.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. What got into cattle?
I do not know. I don't understand the disparity between cash and futures. It's messy, and it really makes you question the viability of the contract, which is a big problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when you hear that the Packers are making $900 a head, I mean, it just sets a feed yard manager's hair on fire when they hear that, Joe. It's crazy.
It does, and the situation is improving. I mean, daily slaughter rates are up like almost every day, and we're returning to normal. It's just we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, ways to go. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep, see you, Jeff.
All right, that's Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. All right, when we come back, we are going to have a conversation with the guys from Pro Farmer, editor Brian Grady, senior market analyst Jeff Wilson, right here on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
This special edition of AgriTalk is supporting Pork Week, paying tribute to pork producers who bring lean and nutrient-rich pork to your table. Coverage brought to you by Merck, PIC, United Animal Health, Alltech Hubbard, and HiPor. Learn more at porkbusiness.com.
I don't know why, but I just flash back to when we passed your Pharaoh. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay.
And the old suey pig.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
get them coming.
And they come a-running.
They come a-running. That's right. Welcome to Pork Week here on
Pork Chops. Talk. Pork Chops. Pork Chops.
Yes. And, hey, on Twitter, hashtag Pork Week. All right? I'm looking for a capital pork with a capital W on week is what I want to see from everybody. That's what we're doing. And you can also go to porkbusiness.com to get all of Farm Journal's coverage of Pork Week. It's
great.
It's this morning's show with Nick Giordano from National Pork Producers Council. Mm-hmm. You can hear the passion in his voice. And
absolutely.
And, when he was talking about the unprecedented times that we are going through in the hog industry right now and how priority one is to get that the funding, not only for those that have been dealt a hardship because of the lost demand for pork and the lower hog prices and the interruption at the slaughterhouses, but also those that have had to euthanize some hogs and get some compensation for those animals as well. Yep. All right, let's get the conversation with the guys from Pro Farmer going. We got editor Brian Grady with us. How you doing there, Beej?
Oh, I'm excellent, Chip. Sun's out. Sky's blue. Corn's growing.
Excellent. Excellent. Jeff Wilson, Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst. How are you, Jeff?
I'm hungry. Give me some bacon.
Bacon.
The old pork buffet is set up and ready to go.
Bacon.
Sausage.
Pork chops.
All right, Beej. What is the I was just talking about demand and how Nick was this morning was talking about the unprecedented times. We know that. So let's do a status update. Let's take a look forward, get a little outlook. What are you thinking on pork demand and hog price outlook going forward?
Well, where we're at right now is slaughter. Today's estimate's about 87% of where we were last year. So we're gradually getting that back. I don't think we're going to move much above that. Everybody in the industry's kind of been in that 85%, 90% range for hog slaughter. So we're about back to where I think we'll be. That doesn't mean that some plants won't increase and some may back down a little bit, but that's where we're at. The interesting thing, and when you look at the price structure in the hog market, you know, we're at a discount to the cash in every single one of these contracts. That's not unusual when we look out to the third and fourth quarter when we see our production normally build. But what is unusual is that those summer month contracts are trading not only below but well below the cash market right now. And you know, that's a clear indication that hog supplies are backed up, as we well know.
Yeah.
But the anticipation that it's going to take quite some time to work through those excess supplies and keep the cash market and futures suppressed.
Jeff, I don't even know if we can work through them all unless some of the producers make a really tough decision and depopulate some market ready hogs, which they've been doing.
Right. They've been doing it and they're doing the best job they can do. You know, this week's slaughter, if we get a kill over 230, we're going to be pretty close to last year's weekly kill. And so I've been told that the Packers have talked about killing more than 200,000 head on Saturday. That helps to, you know, reduce that backlog. But we're talking months, not weeks, to get it back to a situation where everything is orderly and we can go back to trading fundamentals and not emotions, which have been very emotional. I mean, you look at the swings in the wholesale pork market, all the different primals. I mean, bellies, $34 to $220, record. Loins, $64 to $162, new record. Jeez. The carcasses, however, $53 to $122. And now they're back down to $79. And that $122 high we had last month wasn't even above the 2014 high. Part of that problem was that the hams have been a big drag. And part of that is the export market hasn't been as robust for those. And that might be Chinese
canceled a few. The Mexican peso has been relatively weak, so we're not selling as many hams down there.
Yeah. Well, and just the flat price of pork has made it tough to move a lot of product into Mexico, hasn't it, Brian?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I'll let Jeff answer
anyway,
for me.
Go, Jeff. Go.
No, the flat price is definitely a problem. I mean, their economy was just as badly hit as everybody else around the world. But they still like our product. And we're still, they're still their number two customer this year because China became our number one customer. And we're still shipping, a fair amount. It's just that we need to ship more because we have excess supply right now.
Yeah. Yeah, Brian, this morning when Nick Giordano from NPPC was on, he was talking about pork exports to China. And, we're doing 9-10% of our production now is being shipped to China. I tell you what, this time a year ago, it was all a lot of talk that we could get to a level like that. But here we are.
Yeah, we are. And a lot of carcasses going out, whole carcasses and those types of things for the Chinese market. But the key is to keep that demand moving forward. So we have to keep the trade relations. We have to keep phase one on course. And actually, China's behind when you look at the total picture, not only for ag exports or ag purchases, but also just the total buys of U.S. goods. So we anticipate that Chinese demand will pick up the second half of the year. I think that, that's going to be critical, not only on the pork side of things, but for many of the other commodities, including soybeans. But that's why it's critical for these trade relations not to break down at this point in time.
Right. Yeah, let's come back to domestic demand for a second, Brian. When we lost the food service and we lost the restaurant demand, it was gone overnight, and bacon demand gone overnight. And a huge chunk of bacon demand was gone overnight. What's the status now? What have you heard as far as getting that recovery in that food service demand back?
Well, the food service demand, the impact on pork isn't nearly as strong as what it is on beef. Beef's the one that would get hit the hardest there. Interestingly enough, the pork price, while it's very strong, they aren't nearly as high as what the record beef prices are, and so the pinch at the grocery store level on the consumer is coming from beef, and I think that's pushing more demand to pork, also to poultry and chicken in particular there. But I think domestic demand for pork will do okay. The exports, as long as we keep that Chinese market ripping along, we'll be okay on that side too. Okay. And looking forward to 2021, it's going to be even stronger. So that's the good news, is that I think that of beef and pork is definitely set up better than beef is right now from the demand perspective, both domestically and export wise.
Okay. Jeff, on the processing and the supply side of the market again, if we don't get all the way back to 100% of capacity that we had pre-COVID on the processing side, do we see an adjustment on the number of processors in the market and the processing capacity? Does that increase to account for the hogs that are out there, or do we bring the total number of hogs down over time?
I don't think the processing capacity is going to decline at all. We've built some new plants here the last few years, so those guys want to keep going. And, I think most people are in the position right now, they're a long-term investor in processing operations, and they're going to stay going, and they're going to continue to modernize. Obviously, over the next 5 years, automation is going to become a big part of the processing industry. And so we'll see how that works. The fact that we can send these rockets to the space station that are totally computerized would tell me that there is technology out there that they can cut up a hog carcass and make it into retail pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point, Jeff. And Brian, the automation that we're talking about, it's just a question of erasing another vulnerability in the market, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you replace a human with a machine or a robot, and the risk of getting something like COVID removes itself.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, listen, when we come back, we're going to move on. We're going to get past the hog. No, you know what? We've got one more thing that we need to talk about on hogs, and that is the price outlook. What should we expect in the second half of the year? Jeff, get ready for that one. I'm coming to you for that one, and then we'll move on. Talk about the corn, the cattle, soybeans, China. We got a lot of conversation left to have with the guys from Pro Farmer. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmer's First Thing Today. The U.S. dollar index is again under pressure with the greenback hitting its lowest level since mid-March. The CBO says it could take nearly a decade for the economy to recover. The U.S. economy could take the better part of a decade to fully recover from the pandemic and related slowdowns. The refinery that is part of the RFS exemption case has shifted to biodiesel production. That's Holly Frontier up in Wyoming. They're going to produce renewable biodiesel. Meatpacking plants are also hotspots for COVID-19 in Brazil. There's a huge disconnect between cattle futures and cash prices. It continues. Packer profit margins remain impressive at $9.09 per head. And Chinese purchases and cancellations of pork are still in focus. Go to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We're talking to the guys from Pro Farmer today, editor Brian Grady, senior market analyst Jeff Wilson. Before we get back to that conversation, let's get a recap of how the markets closed. Davis.
Well, Chip, July hard red winter wheat was 11¾ cents lower at 450¾. July soft red fell 7¼ cents to 508. July corn futures were a penny higher, 324¼. Dease corn closed at 338. That's up 2¼ cents today. July soybean futures were a dime higher, 850½. November bean futures closed at 860½. Up at 8¼ cents, excuse me. July cotton 31 points higher, 60.37. On the livestock side, June live cattle futures down the $3 daily limit to 95.30. August feeders fell 270 to 133.42½. And June lean hogs were $2.20 lower, 52.40. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right. Did you see the tweet from at Hort Forsyth?
Yes. Sorry about that, buddy.
You're making me hungry, AgriTalk, and I just
sausages.
Had
sausages. Pork chops. Sausages. Pork chops.
I love it. I love it. I'm surprised. I'll admit, Chad, I'm surprised that your gift doesn't say, is that Nyman pork from Ooh. Nyman Ranch?
Let's get specific for the good stuff. Good stuff,
well,
baby.
Yeah. You know, he's a producer for them. He's been on the Farmer Forum before with us.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's get back to the conversation. Jeff Wilson, Brian Grady, Pro Farmer. Jeff, the price outlook. I'm not asking for a specific. I'm not looking for a pinpointed price. Just give me some trends for the middle part of the year and into the second half.
Well, right now, I think everything should be bottoming out a little bit. We should have some seasonal strength going into the late summer period. So we've had this big setback in the last 4 weeks where we anticipated we'd get in slaughter back, and that would put pressure on the product prices. That has occurred. Now we have the carcass value is below the halfway point of this year's range, which means pork is very attractively priced, especially relative to beef and also to seafood. So I think we'll be able to continue to move the meat. Now, you know, the fall and winter months, they look pretty fairly priced where they are right now, but you're going to have to get some demand from the export sector to be relatively robust, because we will get into larger supplies late in the third and fourth quarter. And so right now I think things look fairly priced with an upside bias going into year end.
Okay. Very good. Beej, you mentioned it before. I want to get a little bit more detail on it too, because I was in a grocery store yesterday looking at the meat case. just checking out prices more than anything. And boy, that comment that you made about beef prices compared to pork prices, and that Jeff was making again, here's my example. Okay. Normally I would look at about a 3-pound chuck roast in the meat case, and you just kind of marvel at how good of a deal it is for a family of four. You know, you got that 3-pounder sitting in there, and it was $7.50, $8 forever. And the chuck roast that I saw last night were like $25 a piece. I think the cheapest one I saw was at $22. All of a sudden, that family of four might be flinching when they see that price on a chuck roast there, Brian.
Yeah, unfortunately for the beef sector, that I think that these high prices, extreme prices, are pushing the consumer the other direction, and that's into pork and poultry, like we mentioned. Chicken prices, chicken breast prices, we got record chicken inventories, breast inventories, and that's, you know, it's cheaper alternative at this point in time, you know, we're into the key summer grilling season now, and that's usually a time, the first half of it anyway, where beef normally makes some hay, and I just don't think that's probably going to happen this year.
Right. Yeah, it's really difficult. And you know, a couple of weeks ago, I just decided we're hardly even talking about the fundamentals in the beef market in the news anymore, just given the closing prices, because there is an apparent disconnect from the activity in the futures market, from what's happening in the cash trade, and from the fundamentals, right, Jeff?
Every day, the new adventure. And I mean, part of that's because the volume is so thin right now. No one wants to trade, so you can get a little bit of movement. I mean, the people that want to trade want to have volatility, so they love this. But the people that want to hedge, they want no part of it because of, I mean, you could have taken some huge losses on hedges that were the right thing to do earlier this year, but the market didn't react right away, and the cash market completely collapsed, and your hedges were $20, you know, below where, or $20 above where the cash market was, and now now it's totally the opposite. The cash is 20 above, and the futures are 20 below. You know what I'm saying? And it's just a situation where true hedgers are looking for other opportunities, whether it's forward contracting with the packer, which no one really wants to have happen. I mean, all the discussions we've had about getting 50% of the slaughter to be a negotiated price, well, the negotiated price needs to get above 30% before people feel comfortable to use it. Yeah. So it's a chicken and egg story.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. Okay, Brian, what's your latest thinking on China and their purchases? We've got what they're doing in pork, we've got what they're doing in soybeans, and it feels like all of a sudden the focus is back on beans.
Yeah, I think they played the market a little bit yesterday, to be honest with you. Got some beans bought cheaper, even if it was a nickel or a little bit more than that. You know, but I think they played the market. And they know the soybean market in particular is very, you know, much ebb and flowing with the Chinese headlines. So who knows where it's going from here? We do know that Trump's taken a hard stance. We know that there's been semi comments back from China. But I would say that my take is that China's going to fulfill its phase one to the best of its abilities moving forward, unless something derails it. They need beans. They need pork. They need other commodities. Sorghum's been a big one that they've been purchasing. You know, so I think that they'll continue to chip away. And like I mentioned in the previous segment, the second half of the year should see a ramp up in their purchases.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate that we have to rely on a bad actor. You know, they're not being a very good neighbor to anybody, and haven't been for quite some time. But when you've got a population the size that they've got in China, and the middle class is expanding, at least it was expanding every day, we need to be a part of that market going forward, no question about it. Jeff, crops are looking pretty good out here, man.
crops are looking pretty good here. You can almost hear them growing today. It's 86 degrees, and we've had plenty of moisture. And I was surprised at how well the Wisconsin farmers got their crops in around some of the wetness. And that's what I've been hearing across, you know, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, South Dakota. There's been a few problems with too much rain in Missouri and Illinois, and less so in Indiana, more so in Ohio. But overall, yeah, USDA said the crop was rated 74% good to excellent yesterday. It was more than people expected, so it's on its way towards, you know, trend line yields are better. And you got to get probably through at least the third week of June before that happens. And so the next couple of weeks, if the forecasts stay warm and dry, right now it's only out for at least 7 days warm and dry. But, you know, things are – soil moisture is going to decline over the next 7 days. And then it's going to be a question, does that hot, dry weather stick around? Because that's the next big risk, is do we have a hot, dry pollination period?
Gotcha. Gotcha. Brian, it's kind of a it's a bad combination that this corn market is having to deal with right now. It's that, you know, a crop that was planted on time. It is developing slightly ahead of the five-year average pace. We don't have a lot of threat in the weather outlook. And then over it all is that big 2020-21 carryover projection from USDA. It's a tough combination, isn't it?
It is, and we kind of looked. We did a couple studies on that in terms of price impacts to December corn futures, and the stocks to use when they're years when it's above 17.5%, which it's projected to be for 2020-2021. That puts pressure on basically the corn market December corn futures from June forward and through harvest, and probably not a surprise there. The other factor you mentioned is the initial crop condition ratings, and it came in at 70%, and it increased this past week by 4 percentage points, and that also puts pressure on the market. So we're looking at somewhere probably between 10% and 15% down in December corn futures from June 1 forward based on those two studies. Now, you know, kind of have to caveat that somewhat because the funds are so heavily loaded up on the short side of the market. So we might not see that same type of pressure. But I think the two studies do tell us that if there is some sort of a fund short covering rally, it's probably going to be relatively short lived, and there's going to be plenty of sellers on the backside of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Jeff, if we do get any kind of a short covering rally in there, which is very possible because the funds are heavily short now, we just need to be ready to take advantage of it when it happens, right?
That's right. I mean, it's singles and doubles. There's no home run, you know, potential unless we get, you know, we go from very good conditions to like the 1983 drought where it just the water turned off June 1 and didn't come back. But singles and doubles, just do a little bit as soon as you can.
Yep, absolutely. Guys, thank you so much for the conversation today. I appreciate it. We'll do it again in a couple of weeks, okay?
Sounds good, Chip.
All right.
Thank you,
Brian Grady, editor, Pro Farmer. Jeff Wilson, senior market analyst at Pro Farmer. All right, when we come back, Davis and I are going to put a wrap on today's second hour of AgriTalk.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
Bacon. Could not help myself there. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Good conversation with Jeff and Brian. Always enjoy having those guys on. Good team right there at Pro Farmer. Let's take a look at it. You mentioned it this morning, Davis, when we went over the crop progress numbers for corn. 93% planted. The five-year average is 89%. And you made an interesting conversation. Are we moving? Is 100% moving closer to us, or are we moving closer to 100%? And the answer, obviously, is yes, both. But if we're assuming that 100% is the 97 million intended acres in the prospective plantings report, Right. I would say that the 100% is moving closer to us too. Mm-hmm. The reason that I say this, and I'm going to repeat a little bit of what I said this morning because I think it's very important. In the weekend of May 24th, North Dakota was at 54% planted. The week ended May 31, 75% planted.
Yeah.
So jumped 21 points. With,
turning and burning.
Yeah. And the last plant date or final plant date in that area was May 25th. So we kind of figured that once we got to the last plant date on corn in North Dakota, that they were going to pull the pin on the planter and not stick any more corn in the ground. Well, either they got a heck of a lot done on the 25th or they kept planting through the week. And I would guess they kept planting through the week. So
that kind of goes along with one of those things I say about them, them farmers, optimists, you know? Yeah.
Yep. That's
right. You have
to
be. You have to be.
That's right. Or, and the other thing that, that we could say here is, did the 54% for North Dakota in the weekend of May 24, did that turn into 75% because of reduced intentions? That's a possibility too.
Yep.
So June acreage report, it's so important. And it's going to be as important this year as it was a year ago. I don't think there's any
sounds like
about that.
Somebody's going to be surprised. Is it
what
too
do you
soon
think
to
the
talk
surprise
like
is
that?
Going to, what do you think the surprise is going to be, Davis?
Well, it could be acreage. It could be, you know, I don't know. It could be about anything. That's what makes it so surprising.
Yes, that is so true. So true. Okay. The National Weather Service, 6 to 10-day outlook. This is for June 8th through the 12th. It's got the above-normal temperatures over most of corn country. The exception would be in central South Dakota, which I don't know if I want to call that corn country or not, but they're looking at normal to above normal in South Dakota and normal to above normal in North Dakota as well. Most of Nebraska is also looking at above normal temperatures for that June 8th through the 12th and all the other areas of the Corn Belt. But some moisture comes in. Gosh, it covers a lot of corn country. I mean, the only corn country that it doesn't really get is southern Nebraska, Kansas. Otherwise, we're looking at above normal precipitation are the expectations there. And I know that there's corn growing in Oklahoma and down in the panhandle of Texas and everything, but a lot of those producers can make it rain on their own. So a little different situation there. So we've got some heat. We've got the moisture. Now, that yesterday, that same kind of outlook carried over to the 8 to 14 day forecast, but we flipped this thing for June 10th through the 16th. The forecast is now for below normal temperatures over the Corn Belt.
Wow.
I mean, eastern Kansas, most of Nebraska, up through the Dakotas, Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, the production areas of Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, they're all in there in the below normal precip range. And most of that area is looking for above normal precipitation, focused over there on the eastern belt with normal to below normal precipitation in the western belt. But some cooler temperatures coming back in.
Yeah, because Jeff Wilson mentioned it in our conversation just a little bit ago, and I'd heard the number before, 1983. Mm-hmm. Maybe this pulls us sort of further away from that sort of a year. I don't know.
Well, if these rains develop, yes. If the rains develop, absolutely. Now, if the forecast is off, and I know that that never happens, but if the forecast is off and the rains don't materialize, it's going to be a whole lot easier to take a look at the weather and the crop conditions and say, hey, you know what? Maybe we should consider putting some price or some weather risk into corn and soybean prices. But, man, that's going to be difficult to do. And Brian made mention of the move through some of the moving averages, the move above some of the moving averages. I think he said the 50-day moving average in corn futures and how that is helping to encourage some short covering in here. Boy, I really hope that we don't get through a period of short covering by the funds without much price action. Okay?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and imagine we get the trifecta going here. Short covering, we get a little bit of demand, perhaps even going. And then on top of that, I mean, it could be a pretty okay setup here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It was a good day for pork week here on AgriTalk, wouldn't you say?
It was an absolute buffet of information, Chip.
Corn Firmer had bratburgers for lunch.
Bratburgers keep coming up, baby, you know, and maybe it's just the day.
I had them last night. Yeah. Had to.
It's the bratwurst sensor to sliced bread is what it is.
It really is. It's the best thing since bratburgers, no doubt about it. I'm going to keep it going. Looking at some pork carnitas for supper tonight here at the Florida
Carnitas. Very nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
I'm looking forward
to
that.
May go ahead and just throw a loin out on the sidewalk and let the sun cook it over here.
It may work today.
Thinking about it.
All right. Hey, for Davis and for producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening. Tomorrow morning, Dan Holstrom from the U.S. Meat Export Federation and a farmer forum with MPPC President A.V. Roth and Randy Francis from Iowa.